Record. Okay. Hey, Ruthie.
Hello.
No,
Wait,
that's
don't listen here. Oh, there.
okay. There we are. Okay. And if we can see this,
Better okay.
let me see if we can do this differently. No, what am I trying to do here? No, I don't want to do this. Okay, so we are in Perek Tetzayin, chapter 16, and I decided to do the Rabbi Shulman thing and ping up the Allah Torah to see it on this side. It's the split screen, very cool here, right? Plus Zion. And last time we talked about the age of tshuva. I talked about the Rav Shagars. I explained the difference between tshuva me'ahava and tshuva me'ira. What does it mean to have tshuva out of fear versus love? And he says it's about the nature of our relationship to the past, what we've done in the past. Do I reject the sinner who I was? That's yira, or do I accept who I was and grow from there? And the answer, of course, is yes. Both of them are appropriate. There's no absolute answer. Both aspects of tshuva are appropriate. So now we're going to look at the same thing. And we'll see how Shlomo, the way I'm reading it, is going to expand that idea. And we look at three psukim here, Ratzad Hashem Darchei Ish. When a person's ways are in accordance with Ratzon Hashem, with God's will, he translates when man's ways please Hashem, Gam Oivav Yashlim Lo, then even his enemies, including the person's enemies, will make peace with him. He'll be peace with everybody. Tov Ma'at Tzedakah, better to have a little bit with tzedakah, with righteousness, merov tvod, from lots of produce, below mishpat, without justice. And then lev adam yechashev darko, a person thinks about the way they want to act. Hashem yachin sa'ado, but Hashem sets his steps. And on the surface, these are all separate statements. And oivav yishalim lo is a statement of that about human beings and their opponents. If I do tshuva, I do everything that Hashem wants, then everyone's going to like me. Even the people I've offended, that's my oivav, yashlim lo, will make my enemies will make peace with me. That's where the Rabbeinu Yonah puts it. That this pasuk is connected with the previous ones about tshuva. Ki bala tshuva, asher heira lefanim l'rabim, that someone who's about tshuva, who did wrong things, who wronged others, wronged lots of people. By embarrassing, or by causing pain, of a gava, or by being arrogant, uvuz, and mocking others. You're not going to be forgiven, no matter how much good you do afterwards, until you actually go to the person and try to make amends. And that's Ratzon Hashem. When you act with your tshuva is in accordance with what Hashem wants, you taint in the libchem, and then Hashem is assuring you that when the time comes, they will accept your apology and their hearts will be turned, their minds will change. Nimsun, and it's as though the damage never happened. People will forgive you. You need to actually forgive. And the next psukim are not connected. We have more good advice. Tov ma'apit zaka, better to have a little with justice than lots without it. And the way Imam puts it, Ehuatz batzmo ma shekuz b'tehillim. This is also said in Sefer Tehillim, which we saw in Perek Lamed Zayin, which I look back. We talked about Perek Lamed Zayin in the Tanakh Shir in 2012. You remember that, right? That was a long time ago. But it says, Tov ma'ala sadiq, that's in Tehillim, better a little for a tzaddik, me'amon rasha'im rabim, than the multitude of wealth for the rasha'im. Mefarshat Tam, and it explains it right after that pasuk, kizra'ot rasha'im tshaverna, because the arms of the wicked will be broken, v'somech tzaddikim Hashem, but Hashem supports the righteous. Even have a little bit, if it's with righteousness, if you're a tzaddik, then Hashem will mean that will support you. You don't need a lot. a Rav Shel Rasha, but no matter how much wealth the Rasha has, Hashem's divine providence will destroy it. That's true of money, possessions. Something that you have that's achieved with tzedakah, that's will be under Hashem's providence and it will last. Tov ma'at b'tzedakah, rav tzvot sheyasig below mishpat, but acquiring lots of wealth without mishpat, Hashem yavidu, Hashem will wipe it out. And the next pasuk, that lev adam yichashev, that a person will plan, person plans in his own heart, but Hashem actually makes it happen. Hashem sets the ways of his path. Again, Ratzon lomar shechov shev atzot b'li tiroi ot al darcho, that a person may plan things that are inappropriate. Dash lo yoel, you should know that's not going to help. Asher achar sha, it should be Hashem yachin tzado, because Hashem will set your steps, literally. Will direct your steps, and that you will not be able to act in a way that's not in accordance with Hashem's will. Liyachol it's od below ratzon Hashem. You can't go anywhere that Hashem's will, as they say. Der Mensch trecht und Gott lacht. Right, man plans, God laughs. That's three psukim, and they don't seem to be connected. But the Midrash interprets this oivav yashlim lo, right? Gam oivav yashlim lo. Even if you go in the way of Hashem, then even your enemies will make peace with you. And interprets it as a metaphor. Source six. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omer, Zei Yetzer Hara. When it says the enemy, it's not talking about human enemies, it's talking about your Yetzer Hara. That's the enemy we're talking about. But Olam Adam Bichrach, who kosher lo ava, the way the world usually works, you live with your neighbor 2, 3 years, and you like him, you become closer to him. Zeknuto, but the Yetzer Hara is there with you at all times, but still, Shivim, humapilo, if you found him within your 70 years of life, you would destroy your Yetzer Hara if you could. It's always your enemy, no matter how long you live with it. Toshmanimu polo, within your 80 years, you would destroy it. Zeshet David Amar, that's what the Tehillim says, Kol Atzmatai Tamar Hashem Yichamocha, that all my bones cry out to you, who is like you, O Lord? Matzil Ani Mechazak Mimenu, Hashem saves the poor man from those stronger than him, Vani Ve'ayom Migazlo, and the poor from those who would rob from him. Amar Acha, Kviyesh Gazlan Godol Mizeh. What kind of Gazlan are we talking about? Is there a greater Gazlan, greater thief than the Yetzer Hara? Amar Shlomo, as Mishlei says later on, Imre'ev sonacha hechilehu. Shlomo will say later on, if your enemy is hungry, feed him bread. Imtsamei hashkeu mayim. If he's thirsty, give him water. Again, in the literal sense, talking about human enemies. You know, and the way to make friends is by being friendly with them. And if they're your enemy, they'll make peace with you. Saying, no, that's the Yetzer Hara. How do you deal with the Yetzer Hara? The answer is, feed it bread, give it water. Be nice to the Yetzer Hara, even though it's your enemy. And what is lechem mayim in that sense means melachma shel Torah, that the bread of water, as it says, luchu lachamu b'lachmi, as we saw before, chachma says, go eat of my food, and mayim is also Torah. Hayachma de'omer, as it says, Yeshaya kol havei. Anyone who's thirsty, come to the water. So bread and water here are metaphors for Torah. Learn Torah, teach the Yetzer Hara how to act, and you'll be friends again. So that's what I want to look at. The enemy here is the Yetzer Hara. We have an inborn inclination to do evil, which is clearly not true, right? No, none of us think of ourselves as doing evil. I don't want to do the wrong thing. I want to do the right thing. And so the Malbim puts these together and says, well, yeah, both those are true. If we act Ratzot Hashem, the way Hashem wants, then our natural inclination will be at peace with our conscience. Our Yetzer Hara will be at peace with our Yetzer Tov. And on the outside, Hashem will give us peace from our enemies. This is the Malbim. Hashem will make these enemies be at peace. That's your internal enemies, right? All the forces in you that are pushing you through the wrong thing. Shem Tziyuri HaTavot. This is all the kinds of desires we have. Shahim Shayu Shlamim Ito. That they will make peace with you. Rachel Yala Bilibot Yura. That you won't have any wrong, any evil imagination. Klal at all. She said Gedar Tamimut. That's what it means to be Tamim, perfect. We'll get to that point. And once you get to that point where you're at peace, at one with all your internal urges, then you'll be at peace with your external enemies as well. Just like Hashem, if you can make peace with your internal oivim, the Yetzirah, that Hashem will make sure that you're at peace with the external enemies. So the oivav here is in the plural. Like the yetzer hara is somehow plural, enemies plural. So we don't have just one yetzer hara. And that's what I want to talk about. Sorry. And I've talked about this before, right? I remembered some of this talk about what the yetzer hara means. How do we understand it? What do we need it? And I decided, okay, I'm going to put this all together in one semi-coherent essay, as coherent as I can, one essay here. And it turned out really long. If you look at the page count, it says over here, it's 18 pages long. So I'm going to talk. And I appreciate the fact that you will listen. So if I go on and I don't make any sense, just stop me. We're going to clearly take longer than just the 45 minutes we've got here. We'll continue on. And most of this comes from the Maharal.
Danny, you want to cover this all in 45 minutes.
What do you say?
It might take us more than one time that we meet.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It will definitely take more than one. I would have to go through here, keep it all straight here. But I would say this is mostly the Maharal as interpreted by Rav Moshe Shapiro. And generally, it's through Rabbi Jeremy Kagan. Have you heard of him? He's a
I know that name, but I don't know why.
He's an author. He has a PhD in philosophy. They became Baal Tshuva. He is the founder of one of the heads of Darchei Bina, where one of my daughters went to seminary. He wrote
Where is that?
in Yerushalayim.
Okay.
He wrote a bunch of books. One is called The Jewish Self, and the other is A Choice to Be. But the nature of the self, what is it? Who am I? The essential argument is that the Yetzer Hara is not a Jewish concept, not a religious one. Yetzer Hara is a purely it's a way of scientific way of looking at human behavior. And if you look at all the Rishonim, just like Greek authorities, right? No one, you're not looking at the Torah so much. I'm going to start with that. So what I'm going to start quoting and quote liberally from the atheist, the ultimate atheist, Richard Dawkins. You know who Richard Dawkins was? I think he's still alive.
He thought everybody was a, he was an atheist or something.
He was a very right. He was a neo-atheist that religion is terrible. He wrote The Selfish Gene. So all this comes from the selfish. And he's going to start with an apparently anodyne, meaning vanilla, benign fact, right? Life is different from non-life. There are things that are alive, there are things that aren't. Talks about where that comes from. He says that, if we're looking at the ancient planet Earth, there are all these chemicals that just floating around. There's ultraviolet light from the sun, there's lightning generated, there's heat, and then at some point, a particularly remarkable molecule was formed by accident. And he's an atheist, but a little accident. Though may not have this been the biggest or most complex molecule around, but an extraordinary property of being able to create copies of itself, a replication. Suddenly, a new kind of stability came into the world. One chemical makes another chemical, he's obviously talking about what would end up being DNA. Previously, it is probable that no particular kind of complex molecule is very abundant in this soup, in this mix of chemicals in the water, because each was dependent on building blocks that happened to fall by luck into a particularly stable configuration. As soon as the replicator was born, it must have spread copies rapidly throughout the seas until the smaller building block molecules became a scarce resource and other larger molecules were formed more and more rarely. And that's life. It reproduces. So you have more of it. And you could look at the world just as the same thing, it's just a bunch of chemicals, and all the chemicals interact with other chemicals, and the living things aren't any different from that. But the complexity here, it's something feels very different, that there's now a distinction. Life is different. Life is active. It takes resources from the environment for its own replication. Now, the truth is, there's no sharp line between life and non-life. It's a fuzzy thing. It's a great quote from a poem by Edgar Allan Poe that the boundaries which divide life from death are at best shadowy and vague. Who shall say where one ends and the other one begins? Nope. A virus is alive. It's a bare strand of DNA. What counts? Depends how you want to define it. But there's this useful distinction, and that's the distinction we're going to keep making throughout all of this. That when we add more and more complexity, we end up with something that feels different. You can try to explain it at the lower level, but there's a higher level of organization. And here we have these things that are alive, right? They're creating copies of themselves, they get together. We now have cells, we have plants, and the copy isn't perfect. So some versions last longer, they have more progeny, they make more copies. That's of evolution. Eventually, some of the copies interact with the other copies, with other chemical mixtures in real time. That's what an animal is. Animals move. The way Dawkins puts it, animals become active, go-getting gene vehicles, gene machines. They have behavior. The characteristic of behavior is that it's fast. You can react in real time. And to do that, you need muscles, you need nerves, you need brains, all that. Again, it's a higher level organization than we saw before. Animals have evolved ways of moving hundreds and of thousand times faster than, say, plants or bacteria, single cells. Moreover, the movements they make are reversible and repeatable an infinite number of times. That's behavior. Brains act by controlling, coordinating the contraction of muscles. We need brains. Okay, so we have this new level of complexity. We have animals that are alive and also have what we call behavior. And somebody invents cell phones too.
No, it's my that's my home phone, but I'm ignoring it.
You have a landline, huh?
I still have a landline.
Very impressive. Okay. So
Or
now we
it,
have the
I don't know, it costs a minor fortune, but
now we have animals that interact, right? They have nerves, brains that control that interaction. And that's good for staying alive in a competitive environment, right? There's only so many resources. Everything out there is trying to eat you. But even better than being reactive is to be proactive. To be able to predict the consequences of behavior of yours, of you, the animal, plus all the other animals, and optimize the outcome. So brains then become better and they become prediction machines. The purpose of intelligence is to predict the future. That's a whole nother level of complexity. And so one of the, I mean, the way Dawkins puts it, one of the most interesting methods of predicting the future is simulation. Better try various plans out in dummy runs than in deadly earnest. Part of what your brain does is trying to see what would happen if I do this, what would happen if I do this, and it runs that and it sees what happens and adjusts all of its parameters until you actually come to the outcome you want. So that's intelligence, or we use the word sapience there. And Dawkins used the word simulation, I would use the word model. Our brains contain models of the outside world. We can help predict what's going to happen. And then we also can develop ways of getting those models in one brain into another brain. We can communicate. That's what language is doing. I'm trying to get something, an idea that's in my mind into your brain. Right now, you have a model of chemicals, plants, or non-moving things, animals, and now intelligence. People, though obviously other animals will have some degree of intelligence, there's no fine line there, but we have this fourfold model of ever-increasing complexity. And you probably can't read all the the caption on the comic, but it's talking about that going from the atom, who thinks it's the most complicated thing in the world, to the mineral, to the plant, to the animal, to the human being, to a blank spot. That's our fourfold model. And again, we're talking using the selfish gene because I want to emphasize this is not a religious or mystical model. It's very much in line with a hard atheist view like Dawkins. But that model exists in Jewish thought. And this is from Chabadapedia. Did you know there was a Chabadapedia here? But this is the article on Domem Tzomeach Chai Medaber. Literally, inert plant life and speaking. It's got a Rashi Tevot of Datzcham, in case you need that. But as way he puts it, there are four levels in creation. Inert, plant, moving, and speaking. So that the all the creatures in the world, everything is in these four levels. Whether it's talking actual creatures, but also in our not so much as spiritual, but in our mental state as well. And each one's a subset of the previous one, right? Plants are still minerals, they're still chemical agglomerates. Animals have all the chemical homeostatic mechanism that plants do, and human beings have animal behaviors. We just keep adding on levels of complexity. And then I'm gonna note that this hierarchy is anthropocentric. It's human-centered. Right? It puts human beings at the top of the hierarchy. Right? Because if we were plants, we would probably make a whole different hierarchy that put photosynthesis at the highest value. That's fine because I don't care about minerals, plants, or animals. I care about people. We're going to talk about people's behavior. And every human being has these levels in within them, right? You have needs that are physical, chemical, that involve interaction with others, and intellectual needs. And so we're going to have not so much a fourfold, because we're going to ignore this domain, the chemical side of it. I can't control that. That's not part of my behavior. But I have three other classes. This Tzomer, Chai, and Medaber. And the Rishonim talk about this. And this is the way the Rambam says it in the introduction to Pirkei Avot, what's called the Shmona Prakim. It says, source 13, Da shenefesh ha'adam achat. The nefesh, which we're stuck, not having a good word for that, because soul sounds too from, right? That's our connection. So I'm going to translate it as psyche from the Greek, meaning our mind in the sense of that which controls our behavior. But our nefesh is one, it's unitary. There's only one you. Yesh la pulot rabot chalukot, but there are lots of different aspects of that. We've talked about. So you could call some of them, within the nefesh, there are other nefashot. And the problem is going to be we don't have enough words to go around for all the concepts. We end up with, and everyone picks different names, so we all have this confusing name. But you can divide the nefesh into multiple nefesh. Nefesh. And if you think that therefore you have many nefashot, they're not really separate. We're just going to use the same net word for the each part of them. So the psyche has lots of parts, as the doctors think. I'll talk about the doctors in a moment. Some rosh harofim until the chief physician, he's talking about Hippocrates here, wrote in the introduction to his book, that there are three aspects of nefesh. Tiv'it, natural, chayonit, alive, v'nafshit, and spiritual. Those really correspond to that tzomer, chai, medaber. Physical, interacting, and intellectual. The three parts. That's the Rambam. Pamim shikru b'kochot v'chalkam, nefesh. Sometimes you'll call them parts of the nefesh. And the philosophers will use lots of names for that. Anytime in Rishonim you see the word pilosofim, they're being kind of negative. It's a sarcastic comment. And they don't mean they're separate, like separate bodies would be, or separate things. They're not separate. They're all aspects of the same thing. We divide them up because it's convenient. That all these different things are part of what we call the nefesh, psyche. They're all divided up, but they're all part of the same mechubar. It's all the nefesh is made up of all these various aspects. That's the Rambam. Does that make sense what I was saying there? They can look at your psyche being made up of aspects that are tzomeach, like the plant. There are aspects of you being alive that are like the animals, and there are aspects that are uniquely human. And this is the way the Ibn Ezra puts it. He's talking about the pasuk about Ani Hashem Rofecha, I will heal you. He's going to talk about medicine, cutting edge medicine in the 12th century. Amar Abraham HaMachaber. So Abraham Ibn Ezra, the author, says the following. Yish chachamim gedolim. There are some very wise people, chachmei Torot, who know the Torah shebaal peh, Torah shekhtav, but they haven't dealt with science. So I can't explain these brachot that have to do with health. If I don't tell you something about science. And so, so your physical body is part of the lower world, is physical. And we have a neshama that's elevated, and here he's talking about really about the intellect, the mind is tied to our body. He's a dualist here. There's something different about mind versus body. But the HMCM, Ben Shama Baguf, but there are media, there are intermediaries between body and mind. And there are two, and we're going to divide them into two categories. Those are familiar words. So we have the neshama is the highest level, and then we have ruach and nefesh is the lower levels. The neshama here, chokhmah. So neshama here is not some kind of spiritual soul, but is chokhmah, is intellect, is thinking. Umoshava b'moach harosh, and the seat of the neshama is in the brain, in your head. I think he's happened to be right. I don't think yes, they knew that. But ruach, which is the next lower down, balev. And that's the chai, that's the movement there, and it's centered in the heart, again in 12th century medicine. So the aspect of being alive that's for the animal like that's the ruach. Srara, that's the part of you that drives to at once leadership. Gaber kol med connect to overpower others. Viba takas, and that's where anger comes from. But nefesh, and the nefesh, which is the lowest level, so we have nefesh, ruach, neshama, you've heard those terms before. The nefesh, which is the kind of the part of you that drives physical needs, is bekaved, is in the liver, in case you ever know where the nefesh was. He metavel echol, that's the part of you that wants, that desires to eat. And as it says in the Devarim, ki tataven nafshecha, when you want to eat meat, it's used the term taven nafshecha, the nefesh. The tavat hamishkal mimena, same thing through the urge for sex and reproduction, that's also part of the nefesh. Bnei she'adam she'nivra, dahayu lo elu hashlosh and nizkarot chazakot, ukolan yafot, o chazakav zerafeh, and everyone has these various three aspects, and they're either strong or weak, depending on which one is more powerful in you there, and they can be either strong or weaker in between. Oh, lo chazakav kind of the middle. B'nei ben adam al kof zayin minim mishanim. So there are 20. He says there are 27 different kinds of people. You have three different aspects. Each of them has three different levels: weak, medium, or strong. And so it's three of their powers, 27. So he says, as a doctor, we can divide people up into 27 aspects of these various things, and we can figure out, if you're which one is stronger and which one's weaker. But I don't know if that's relevant to medicine, but it's a useful way of thinking about people. Ruach, nefesh, ruach, neshama. We have things that drive us to meet our physical needs. We have things that drive us to meet our social needs and our intellectual. And the source of that, this chokhmah, this science there, is from Plato. So we're going to quote Plato, or at least read about Plato. Okay, you all remember your ancient Greek, right? Okay, this is the Republic, Book 4. Plato delineates the human soul, which again is the psyche in Greek, okay? Because soul, neshamas, has too much Jewish baggage on there. So I'm going to call it psyche. is comprising of three distinct parts. The logistikon, which is the rational part, which seeks truth, wisdom, and calculation. The thumenoides, which is the spirited part, spirit in the sense of moving around, that provides motivation, courage, adherence to honor. And the epithumeticon, which we call the appetitive, also called vegetative, which pursues bodily desires such as hunger, thirst, and sensual pleasure. Again, that's exactly what the Rambam said, exactly what Ibn Ezra said. This is all Plato, this is all Socrates. And again, it's also all Dawkins there. We think of our
Danny,
God.
who was first, Plato or the Rambam?
What?
Who was first? Was Plato first?
Plato was much before the Rambam. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Plato would have been what? 350 BC?
Yeah, way before him.
There is a quote in the Ramah about Plato meeting Yirmiyahu. Probably not literally true. I think the time is a little bit off, but it's about that. Okay, so we have this appetitive soul, the vegetative soul corresponds to Tzomeach, spirit soul corresponds to Chai, rational soul is the Medaber. And again, soul isn't the spiritual thing, it's an abstraction of everything that makes us alive. All these acts of being alive, not dead, that's all, we'll call it psyche. Or nefesh chaya, and Bereishis, right, vayi Adam lenefesh chaya, use that term. And the problem, again, is that we have so many different things to find, not enough words to use, and everybody uses each word differently. So it gets confusing, and it says that every social science text introduction starts with continued disagreement about the definition of what we're all talking about has continued to hinder progress. For the sake of this work, I will create a new one. So every book creates its own definitions and its own terms. So we're always stuck. Of course, that means you always get tenure. But we've heard those terms before, right? The nefesh, ruach, neshama. You've heard that. And again, as a hierarchy, nefesh being the lowest form, then ruach, then neshama higher than that. It's abbreviation nun resh nun. You'll see in that Kabbalistic literature all the time. And again, as we quoted, the categories are made for man. These are not real. The nefesh is unitary. We're dividing it up because it's easier to talk about them. And we make other categorizations. We'll sometimes talk simply about the nefesh bahamit, the nefesh elokit, putting the nefesh and ruach into the same category, what Ibn Ezra calls the emsayim ben neshama baguf, the middle layers between the neshama and guf. So we haven't gotten to the Yetzer Hara yet. We're getting close. So in Plato and Ibn Ezra talk about these various parts are what motivates behavior, right? It's the part that seeks or provides motivation, pursues, mevakesh, all of that. It's what motivates behavior. Because all we want to do, being alive, is survive. Both in the sense of us and also pass our genes on to the next generation, we want to reproduce. And as Dawkins puts it, Darwin's survival of the fittest is really a special case of more general of survival of the stable. Which is a truism. It's redundant, right? Things that are more stable last longer. It's obviously true. So the universe is populated by stable things, which is it. See, as he puts it, stable things, a collection of atoms, which is permanent enough or common enough to deserve a name. Again, this is anthropocentric. It's in our perspective. Maybe unique collection of atoms, such as the Matterhorn, which lasts long enough to be worth naming. Or it may be a class of entities, such as raindrops, which come into existence at a sufficiently high rate to deserve a collective name, even if any one of them is short-lived. So everything that we do, we want to be stable, not continue on to be worth having a name. So that to the extent that our behaviors are determined by genes, these behaviors maximize stability. We stay alive, have progeny. And again, that's not deep. In the sense that it has to be true. If it didn't wasn't true, then those genes wouldn't last, and then it would be there. So the way this model works is that we have needs at every level of the model. Okay, it's like Maslow's pyramid has these levels of needs. Lucy knows this, right? She's a psychiatrist or psychologist, right? Or what is your degree in?
My
social work.
Social work. You still have to know all these things, right?
You
Right,
definitely learn this in
the
social work
bottom
school.
layer, the top layer. Okay, so it's not exactly the same thing, but we have a bottom layer that's the Tzomeach, being our physical needs, the middle layer, which is the chai, which means our social needs, and the upper layer, which is the medaber, which is our intellectual needs. And okay. And again, so the nefesh is the part of the psyche that controls behavior, that meets somech needs. Ruach controls chai needs. Neshama meets medaber needs. Okay, so what's the yetzer hara? Yetzer hara, yetzer means the inherent nature. That's what we're talking about. That's the way we're created. The way our genes influenced by our environment. We don't have a choice about it. It's the things that push us. And then ra here doesn't mean evil in the sense of a moral judgment. It's a statement that our behavior is aimed at meeting our own needs, not Hashem's purpose in creation. And the Rebbe Kagan puts it is that literally the word ra, which we may translate as evil, means broken off. An example here from Tehillim, Tru'im, B'Shev, Barzel, break them with an iron rod, should break them, Tru'im, meaning broken off from the Creator. That's what the Yetzer Hara is. It's self-centered, being broken off from one another, and it's perfectly natural. Again, it's a Yetzer. That's why we were created that way. Can't argue with that. As it says, when it's, excuse me, as Hashem says, when after the flood, when Hashem promises he's not going to destroy the world again, says Vayirach Hashem Riach Nechoach, Hashem appreciated Noach's sacrifice. Yomer Hashem El Lipo, and Hashem says to himself, Lo sifa klel odet adamah bavur hadam. I will no longer curse the earth because of humanity. Ki yetzer lev hadam ra minu arav, because the or in this case, despite the fact that human being's nature, his yetzer is ra, it's cut off from the moment he starts to move, from the quickening, as they say, in the womb. You're always ra. The yetzer is ra. Still, I won't destroy everything. We'll give him a chance. And so the
Sounds
Mishnah.
like original sin. Sounds like everybody born bad.
Right. That's what I'm going to say. Ra doesn't here mean bad. We're not in moral judgment. People are born self-centered. Okay? And that's true. And so that the Mishnah says there are three aspects of the Yetzer Hara. The Pirkei Avot. Rabbi Elazar Kapar Omer, Hakin'ah, Vatav'ah, Vakavod. We'll translate kin'ah, we translate as jealousy in the sense of mimetic desire. I've used that term before, right? I want what other people want. I'm a social primate. I take my cues from everything I see around me. So whatever you want, I must want also, because it must be a good thing to want.
That's Aviva Zornberg's favorite word.
Mimetic?
Mimetic desire. I don't remember in what
Well,
context.
actually, it's spelled wrong here. Like, it's not mimetic like a meme. It's mimetic like imitative.
Yeah.
Right. It's an I there. I gotta get that right. Okay, there we go. Mimetic desire. So the idea of mimetic desire is René Girard, is a Belgian sociologist, who points that out. Most of our desire is not based on I want what you have. It's I want what you want. How do I know what I want? That's because I see you do it. So it's not necessarily, again, it's not a bad thing. So about kinat sofrim, marba chokhmah, by having kina'ah of a scholar, I can't take that. It means I want that wisdom as well. So that's a good thing. It increases wisdom. If I take my cues from those around me. Tava literally means lust, but it means appetite, to f desire to fill physical needs. And kavod, usually translated as honor, but nobody knows what honor is in 21st century America. The way it translates is the status. How do I rank relative to those around me? And what do other people think of me? Okay? That's desire for kavod. People are social creatures with thrive and connection and approval. And this is kavod is social validation. It activates the brain's reward system, releasing dopamine. Again, that's probably how all this yetzer hara works, by sending dopamine. But Elazar Kapar says that these three things, kina, tava, and kavod, mutzin et adam min ha'olam, take a person out of the world. So what does that mean? So the Maharal makes this obvious connection that these aspects of yetzer hara connect to those three parts of the psyche, one to one. And this is the Maharal on this on this section of Pirkei Avot. So he's first going to go through that the tripartite psyche model that we just said. Dalakha, ki adam hu bal chai. You should know that people are alive. Okay, you shouldn't realize that. V'yesh lo nefesh, and you have a nefesh in the broader sense than the sense that the Rambam used it. We are alive. The nefesh hazot, yesh la kochot mechulakot, and this nefesh is divided up. Shepo'elet be'elo kochot po'alot mechulakot, and this division activates different, or acts in different ways, has different forces, makes us do different things. But the Rambam Zabak Damat Mesechta, okay, then the rhyme there, as the Rambam wrote, we quoted before, she some Rosh Rofim, Sipuro, Shana Fashot Shalosh, Tivit Chiyunit Nafshit. Now we have the three parts that are Tivit, natural, Chayunit, motile, moving, Venafshit, and intellectual. And again, these are the three parts. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. That these are not separate nefashot in any sense. There's only one. But there are different aspects of it. That you do different things, different behaviors based on these different things that you're acting. And the explanation of these three things is koach tivi. The natural, the tzomeach side, lekosh to makabel hazana she'adam nizon, is the one that drives nutrition, sustenance, teva, and rejects things you don't need, elimination, and takuf, but orach and allows you to grow, sure whoever it is. Mikloch tava luznut, and this is where tava, so it is connected. The word tava goes with this koach tivi. The Who al yaday matara teva shem vashel koach sen. It's the aspects of our teva, our nature, our physical self that excites this kind of this power. Go koach atava who mikoch zeh shenikra koach tivi. That's the tava. The yetzer hara for tava comes from nefesh.
Also,
Mishkan.
the expression "bateavon" comes from tava.
Yes, right. You should eat with appetite. You should want this. That's using your nefesh, your koach hativi, using your what was the Greek word, epithiometikon, I think it was in Plato's sense. You can go ahead and say that next time you want something to eat.
The Teavon and Taavar are different roots, right? They're not
No,
the
that's the same root.
same.
That is the root.
Because I thought Teavon is with a tet. It's with a tough, like Taava. Yeah.
As far as I know, it is.
I did not know that.
Oh, oops.
Because I thought Teavon is with a tet, a bet, an ayin. No?
I don't know.
Comes from this route.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm so confused. I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah, that's we're gonna look this up, right? Oops.
I mean, there is a bet, but Teavon, but then there's Tetvav, Vav, none.
Here he does have a test here. Interesting. So maybe I am wrong here. Tevon.
Why wow, you had that with Tet?
I have it. It was a tough. The
No.
Tava was the tough. Oh, no, this is. Wait, it gave me Taiwan. That's not what I want.
That's so funny. Oh no, you're right. It's with a tuf. I just looked it up. Tavon. It's with an aleph and a tuf. It's the same. I don't know why I thought it was with the Tet. You were right. Sorry. Go on. So it's the same shoresh.
Here we go. Bon Appetit gets translated as, we're going to Google the Teavon, yep, with a vet, but not a vav. Tava is a vav. I mean, it's not exactly the, I mean, they're clearly related. I mean, okay, but that's the Ta'avah. Okay, Koach Chiyuni, the second aspect of the psyche is who a Koach Chiyuni. This is again, it's continuing the Maharal, this power of life, Shemimin Achayut, that's movement, animal nature, that's Chai. And that's how a person moves from one place to another. That's where we get to say jealousy and revenge and itira and bearing grudge, and jealousy and hatred. That's all kin'ah corresponds to the nefesh chai, to the ruach. In the terms we use it. And that's it dwells in the heart. This will be everything. Brain, the heart, and the liver. Shoshama koach hazeh. Vashlishi koach hanafshi. And the third one is the koach hanafshi. We'll call it the intellectual. Koach hazeh yavo mimena kochot habeh. And there are various aspects of that. For instance, the five senses, we're all go into the intellectual part. And thinking, imagination, memory, and analysis. And this is in the brain. So, yesh lechol kochot nefesh, and this is the three parts. That's the three parts we said before, and that corresponds to three kinds of yetzer hara. And then he continues, though this is really a paragraph later on, but kavod, that kavod in this three list of kina, tava, and kavod belongs to koach ha-sichli. That's what we want, honor, that this idea of looking at status, of establishing a rank relative to others, is part of our intellectual self. As it says in Mishlei, kavod chachamim minchal. Wise get covered. Says Mipnei Seiva, you have to honor those who have wisdom. In Zakeno Zeshakara Chachma, wisdom goes with honor, those go together. Okay, so now going beyond that. So what does it mean to have a Yetzer Hara? It takes you out of the world. It's when you go too far. It's too strong. You're dedicating all your behavior to one or other these other aspects of yourself. So going too far with Rifat HaKavod, looking for more kavod, you're tearing down more than you need. Magia lo chitzron ve'eder mitzad hakoach hazeh, you'll end up losing kavod. Not good. So, the Chachamim said, Karuatam, and this we'll see these terms, these three terms were called ruach, nefesh, and neshama. That's the term we'll use for the meditative soul. Vital soul called the moving soul and the intellectual soul, psyche, however you want to call that. Again, lots of words there. We will use the word ruach nefesh neshama because those are useful and everybody knows those words. And as Maharal says, that's what we should call it. So what the Mishnah says, these three things take a person out of the world. You no longer are part of this world. If you have these three, even though everyone has those three, has all these aspects, but your nefesh has these three parts, that we just explained. If you have it to do to too much of extreme, again, these are the things that lead you to behaviors that meet your needs. But if you're dedicated to any one of those things too much, you miss everything else. And then, Hare Yotzei Min HaOlam, you're not part of the world anymore. Not part of the human world. Shadamu ba'olam ayidei gemakol kol, because we exist through these three aspects. Ki adam ba'olam ayidei koach nafshi, because we exist, we interact with others, we're here because of these things. Im hu yotzei ayidei koach zeh min hashir, so if you go beyond any of those things more than is appropriate, notet eder, you'll end up with the opposite. You'll end up with lacking. Call davar to sum up. Yaday elo gimel devarim ha nefesh shel adam yotzei migvul shelo Asheru, that going through these, if you're going to the extreme, dedicating yourself to qin'ah, dedicating yourself to tava, getting yourself dedicating yourself to kavod, takes you out of the limits of what is appropriate for being alive. It takes you out of the world. Not saying the physical world, but the what Robert Carver called the normative world, society. When you go beyond any one of those three things, beyond that what they should be, go to any of the extremes, then you're no longer part of the world. That's what we explained. So let's summarize it. As our little chart, we have the Nefesh Chayav Tzomeach Chayim Medaber, or in Kabbalah, we call it Nefesh Ruach Neshama. We have the Greek words, which we should remember, right? The Epithometikon, the Theoetes, and the Logisticon. Okay, we got English words, and the Yetzer Hara that goes with those are Tava, Kina, and Kavod. So there's our plural. Oivav, that's our plural yitz, the yitzhar haras, there are lots of them there. And the needs that they express are real and they have to be met. You can't ignore it. So when they're excessive, right? Yotzei migvul, as Maharal says, that they're destructive. So our pasuk says, Ratzot Hashem darchei ish, gam oivav yishalem lo. The Midrash is telling us that the oivav are these various aspects of the yitzhar hara, that you have the urge to meet your own needs. But they're not our friends. They're our enemies. They need to be treated with warily. Okay? You have to act in a way that's consistent with Ratzon Hashem, and then you can live at peace with those urges. Make sure we're controlling them, they're not controlling us. I'm gonna stop here. This is about halfway through. Does that make sense what I we were saying there about the Yetzer and the nature of the
So the Yetzer Hara is if you take any of these categories of, I don't know what you want to call them, life, let's just say you're living being,
Yes.
to an extreme, which takes you away from
Yetzer hara is the urge to fulfill the needs. The
right,
danger is in
going over.
fulfilling them to an extreme, ignoring the other needs that are out there.
Right.
And that's what you're trying to avoid. That's what you have to have shalom. You have to make peace with those oivim, with all of them. We'll stop here. We'll go on because this is definitely not the whole story. We'll have to continue on from here, but it's already 30.
Thanks, Danny. I don't know when you had time to do this, but.